Do you know what a third place is?
Third places.
Welcome to Floating Space. Hi, I'm Katie. I'm 25. I live in London and I'm lonely. A strange thing to admit out loud, but it's true. I moved to London post-uni, post-pandemic, in pursuit of a big career, a thriving social life, and memories of my 20s that would last a lifetime. In reality, I've found it tough to connect and forge strong adult friendships. I've always lived in small towns where I've had the benefit of the small town network, knowing your neighbours, your local shopkeepers, the folks around you. So I thought I knew the roadmap of becoming a local and making friends. But London is a whole different kettle of fish. For starters, having a fully remote job hasn't made it any easier. My days sound a little something like this. Early rise, trudge to my desk, work, 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 Netflix and lights out, rinse and repeat. Some days I don't even leave my flat. This is me comparing my daily step count with my boyfriend.
Okay. How many steps do you think you average a day?
Probably around 7,000 or 8,000. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what mine are?
Go on.
Okay.
This is where you flex.
My worst was 3,000.
Same.
Worse than that was 2,000.
That's pretty bad.
And my worst day ever, 100.
100 steps?
Yeah.
What did you do? Nothing.
Well, I walked there to my desk, which is about one step away. And I went to the toilet. Probably like
Oh dear.
And that embarrassingly takes us here, right now. At a loss of what to do, my algorithm came to save the day. Or at least point me in the right direction.
If your internet search history looks anything like mine, you've probably heard of the term third place.
One of the things I've been learning about lately is the power of a third place.
That being the growing lack of third places.
So what is a third place, you ask? Thank you for the setup. A third place is a concept thought up by sociologist Ray Oldenburg. He suggested that everyone needs three places. Their first place is their home. Their second place is their workplace or place of study. And their third place is where you exist, in between. Somewhere neutral you can socialize, interact, and just be. Now, Oldenburg's work had a particular focus on suburbia in the US, which was predominantly white middle class. He published his book, The Great Good Place, in 1989, critiquing the privatization of places and activities that used to be public. Sitting in your own big garden instead of a park, doing workouts at home instead of a gym or an exercise group, swimming in your own pool instead of a Lido. Ah, the luxuries. Oldenburg said, what suburbia cries for are the means for people to gather easily, inexpensively, regularly, and pleasurably. A place on the corner. Real-life alternatives to television, easy escapes from the cabin fever of marriage and family life that do not necessitate getting in an automobile. Transporting this theory into 21st century London comes with caveats, but I think it still rings true. People are retreating from public spaces, taking the money that would have kept these places funded and running to indulge in quiet luxuries alone. Why? Well, the world today and its amenities are increasingly designed for the convenience of the individual, not the collective. Look how easy it is to shop, order food, and selectively message people from the comfort of your own bed. Now layer that convenience with a post-pandemic mental health crisis, a prioritization of our online identities, and a cost of living crisis. Not to mention the merging of our first and second places with work from home. Convenience and withdrawal from society has led to the long, drawn-out death of third places. Pop culture gives us a taste of how central third places used to be. Look at the coffee house Central Perk in Friends.
How about tomorrow afternoon? Do you know Central Perk in the Village, say five-ish?
Or McLaren's Bar in How I Met Your Mother.
Hey, you want to do something tonight? Okay, meet me at the bar in 15 minutes and suit up!
In both these cases, the group of friends lived walking distance, or actually above, the establishments. They seemed to be able to hang out there for hours on end. And everyone could afford it. Cut to me going to a pub last week, being charged £8 for a pint. £8! If we can pick up the pieces of what we know about third places, I have every faith we can recreate them, or better yet, create new ones. So I want to make this third place finding mission as simple as possible. Let me manifest it here and now. I'm looking for a third place, open, social, low financial barrier to entry, my place to belong. As with the start of any project, I needed to find some inspiration and do my research. So I asked my friends what their third places are.
I'd say like the football and gym I go to, also the pub for sure.
I've started going to a cafe like down the road, or also bookshops. I quite like going because my mum had a bookshop growing up.
Sometimes open spaces. One that comes to mind, like, again, I'd say these are more like fleeting encounters, but pleasant ones nonetheless and valuable. Probably Reddit.
Okay, so a varied and interesting mix. Football club, gym, pub, cafe, bookshop, outdoor space, and Reddit. Let's go back to Oldenburg's original theory. I should be able to access my third place without getting into a car. So I'm gonna try keep it local and find my little community in my borough. So on recommendation, I'm gonna try the gym. There seem to be no downsides. Get fitter, stay active, meet people that want to do the same thing. So let's give it a go. A quick look at the history of social exercising. There's evidence of team and group activities back thousands of years. Team ball games can be traced back 3,000 years to the Mayans, though the losers of those games were likely to be beheaded or sacrificed. But I bet the high of being a winner was unbeatable. FIFA have recognized the ancient Chinese game Chuju as the origins of football, from all the way back in 2300 BCE. And a little closer to home, social exercising has evolved over the last 100 years from lycra leotard-wearing jazzercise to the cult of spin. Today, there are low-cost gyms available all across the city, making exercise accessible to you 24 hours a day. So that's where I headed. So there I was, trying, very hard, or struggling, whatever you want to call it. My first few sessions at the gym were focused on consistency, going to the free weights area at the same time of day and trying my hardest to keep the routine. Here are my conclusions after the first few sessions.
Okay. Overall, just going to the gym, pretty straightforward. I reckon it made me realise working out is hard, and I actually don't see when someone's going to strike up a conversation. Also, wearing earphones or headphones is kind of the universal please don't talk to me. So next time I'm going to try going without headphones. I'm going to try going at the same time. And yeah, all of these seem really obvious, but I don't know, it's just kind of hard in practice. I guess that's the point. But yeah, let's give it a few more goes.
So that's what I did. Strolling into the gym with my naked ears, trying not to shut myself off from interaction. The following days, I battled not only the workouts, but doing it without headphones. And then this happened.
Okay.
Did you catch that? Please don't talk to me, please don't talk to me. I think that was the moment I realized, actually, I don't want people to talk to me at the gym. Having to sit through an uncomfortable conversation mid-workout being asked where I live, where I'm from, am I single, just made me strikingly aware of my safety over any connection I was looking for. 60% of women have felt harassed by a man in the gym, according to an Origem study. It's not all gyms, and it's not all men. But it makes me hyper aware of the places I'm committing time to and how much of my mental energy is spent on keeping myself safe versus actually enjoying myself. I think about how I feel in a lot of public places and the people that have approached me in the past. As a woman in a city, I'm constantly aware of not encouraging attention and keeping to myself. So that definitely plays into how I present myself and my willingness to interact with strangers. In a strange way, London is a great place to keep to yourself because it has such a funny culture of hostility. Maybe hostility is too strong a word, but distance. Here's my housemate Marcus's take on that steely culture.
I think, though, especially in London, the way people are in majority of places is like headphones and kind of not really... myself included, like, you're not really signaling to people that you want to have a conversation if you're just headphones in, looking at the floor or something, or engrossed in what you're doing.
Do you think that's a London problem, a you problem, or like a situational place problem?
It's definitely a me problem, but it's also a London problem as well, yeah. Yeah, I think everyone's kind of in their own bubble.
So it's that baseline distance that makes it even more stark when there's an unsettling or unwelcome interaction. So how do I find a place that facilitates a safe but open interaction? Is it just a people problem? Or could it be the places themselves? Before I went on another trial, I wanted to know if it was me or the place that was the problem. I spoke to a friend of mine, Celine, who's an architect in training, with experience in social and public planning. I wanted to know why I was struggling to find my third place. And why my friends were having the same troubles too.
My understanding of Oldenburg's book, my understanding is that because of suburban sprawl in America, like you were describing, the sort of the American dream of the white picket fence and a detached house. And so you're having to spread out all these different amenities. And then because you spread everything out, you have to get a car to get anywhere. You're building more roads. And so it's literally physically isolated zones of where you can do anything. And so people feel really isolated. And that's where he started to observe the dying of third places, because people are so literally removed from the access to all these different things. It's just, everything is too far. And I guess when you fast forward to now, no one has time, no one has money. No one can get anywhere. It's too expensive to drive. It's too expensive to take a train. It's just too much everything. And so we're even more acutely aware that these third places are gone. So in that sense, I think it's even more relevant now.
Everything is expensive. Everything is far away. So is there some kind of council, government, public body responsibility to create accessible third places?
Yeah, so like you said, there are legislations, there are planning rules to embed these third places into buildings. It's a point-based system, so you're basically tick-boxing. You do this, you get 2 points. You do this, you get 5 points, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of them will have the most simplest thing, like providing public bins, providing a public bench, providing greenery, and these very, very minimal things that give them points to say, look, we're doing something for the public. You know, this might not, the building itself might be limited in access, but at least we have these outdoor spaces that allow the public to sort of interact at the threshold of whether allowed. So yes, it's a thing that, of course, government is aware of, and designers are well aware of it. But in practice, you could get away with doing the absolute bare minimum. And on paper, obviously, you can show that, oh, we're doing all the good things. We're doing everything we're asked for. Whether or not that's actually pushing people to be able to use it as a third place is a whole other question in itself.
So this is what we're up against in the hunt for a third place. It isn't just that London is expensive. That's no surprise to anyone. The infrastructure of this growing city isn't built with community and human connection in mind.